Hi, I'm Morgan.
Hi, I'm Chelsea.
This is the Unlocked podcast hosted by the 2021 GBI graduates.
Today we'll be joined by Laura
from the Liminal Space.
Thank you, Laura, for coming to speak with us today. For anyone who doesn't know, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Laura Gordon. I'm a research-led graphic designer, and I've got a couple of different work hats. So I work 3 days a week at an organization called the Liminal Space, and we do a lot of work using art and design for public engagement, particularly with the sciences. So we do a lot of like installations, exhibitions, increasingly web-based stuff. And then I also teach 1 to 2 days a week at the Royal College of Art on the visual communication program. Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple of other hats. I'm the treasurer and graphic designer of the union there. And I work with an organization called Migrants in Culture. Mm-hmm. And I still do a little bit of freelance editorial graphic design as well. And yeah, I was super excited to be invited in to work with you guys earlier in the year in a project we ran with some of you amazing students.
So the first topic is kind of going to revolve around designing in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So how has it been for you designing in a space that isn't necessarily creative, but still having to come up with creative ideas?
So it's sort of different depending on, I guess, which job hat I've got on. Mm-hmm. We've been actually at Liminal Space, we've been super busy this year. But a lot of the stuff that we do normally is, as I said, kind of exhibition installation based. A lot of that mm-hmm. had to be like very quickly rethought. Some of that is more digital spaces. And I think from speaking to friends, that's actually something I've kind of heard quite a lot in the last year. I think for a lot of people, there's not less design work happening. There's the same mm-hmm. amount. It's maybe just in slightly different shapes. So we've been doing more digital stuff, but we've also been doing quite a lot of like workshops that we would have done in person. We're doing like, we're making kits and sending them out in the post, for example. Okay. So we are still making.
Happily, yeah.
But we're kind of employing distance in different ways, or we're mm-hmm. doing things kind of separately and together. I guess similar-ish actually to teaching in that way. We're further apart.
Yeah.
Sort of alone, but we're still trying to find ways to build connection and feel together and sort of have shared experiences, even if we can't be in the same physical spaces. So kind of trying to find design responses to that has been kind of an interesting challenge this year.
Yeah. So I guess you're saying that when you guys, we usually do physical spaces, pandemic has obviously affected that. My next question was kind of going to lead into how the pandemic has affected the industry in general. Mm-hmm. Is this something you think would probably continue as it pertains to like virtual events being more of a consistent thing, or mm-hmm. do you think it's gonna kind of go back to normal as soon as it can?
Good question. I think it's gonna be a bit of both, really. I think there's some places that we certainly are just desperate to be back together in the same spaces.
Yeah.
But I think there is also, you know, I'm thinking about teaching and I'm thinking about events that I've been to. There are some small glimpses of opportunities of like, oh yeah, we could have a talk from someone who's based in South Korea. Like, mm-hmm. sure, the time difference is a bit tricky, but it's stuff like that where it's like, 2 years ago, I would have never been like, yeah, I'll definitely contact someone who's a flight away. That seems like a good, viable plan. So I think it's holding the bits that feel good. And mm-hmm. maybe that's, you know, some of the stuff a bit more around, you know, working from home a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and being able to access events and people and spaces that geographically wouldn't normally be possible. And then I think there's the stuff that we're just desperate to come back together, which in my experience has tended to be kind of smaller group discussion to me. It just doesn't work the same in this sort of space. Or a celebration, I also think, is quite hard to do in these sorts of spaces.
Definitely.
So I think it's like holding on the new things that have become possible and then like, yeah, running back to the good bits of being back in person. But I think ideally not just kind of reverting to normal as a like default.
Yeah.
We'll just go back to whatever it was. That's what we did. I think we've got to be smarter than that about being intentional about what exactly it is we want to go back to.
So taking the positives and kind of evolving with it in a case.
Yeah, and there are just some things that, like, I feel like I've got to be really careful to not, there are some things that are just rubbish. Like, there are some things that can just go and like very happily so, and I don't want to blame it, like, COVID, what a great opportunity, because it's not, it's been terrible.
It has.
But I think there is, yes, there needs to be space for kind of learning and reflection rather than just a kind of autopilot. Let's go back to how exactly how things work.
Okay, Ian. So we had a look at your timeless projects, and we're very intrigued to find out how, where that research took you, what inspired the kind of store approach, and kind of like how to push the boundaries of design to a more physical space.
Yeah, so Timeless was the first project I actually worked on with the Liminal Space. So I think 2015, 2016, we first worked on that. So I was potentially a bit less involved in the kind of full design cycle than I am now, but I was very involved, so I can definitely speak
to Okay, that's good.
So that research was done with academics at the LSE, I think in their gender and law department. What Sarah and Amanda are amazing at doing is kind of connecting academic researchers to kind of current affairs, I guess, and social changes and stuff that you see in the news. So it was around that time, there was a lot of stuff in the news about big companies. I think it was Google, I think Facebook were doing it too, were offering, and it was part of their benefits package. They were offering egg freezing, like as a free service to more in the US, where that this kind of medical package is a normal part of an employment contract. So they're offering egg freezing as a thing. And that opened up lots of really interesting conversations around work, labor, reproduction, women's rights. I just felt like that was a bigger story. So the idea of like, oh, if you work here, then you could have babies later. And it's like, okay, what would that mean?
It's not that simple.
Yeah. And like, what does that mean your relationship with your employer is? Like, keeping these eggs? What's the timeline? What happens if you leave the job? Like,
Do you have to tell them everything?
Yeah, exactly. So it opened up quite a lot of these murky ethical questions, which is often what we work with. And the idea was, so egg freezing is often aimed at essentially women in their 20s and 30s, because that is when it's most biologically, that's actually not when it's most biologically viable, but it's kind of the moment at which societally you might be thinking, I might want to have babies, but I don't want to do it right now, or I haven't met the right person, or da 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 da. So the idea was like, okay, well, if that's the group of people that egg freezing is aimed at, like, what else is aimed at those people? Like, beauty. beauty products, ideas around, particularly ideas about anti-aging, or like freezing time, or
freezing eggs, freezing time.
Exactly. So a lot of that draw on this language of kind of anti-aging, thinking ahead to the future, preparing your skin in advance, all of these kind of tropes around like women wanting to stop time. So we borrowed visually from that a lot, particularly around a sort of kind of like a Space NK vibe. So more of a like women in their 30s sort of feel, rather than a like more youthful. So we're trying to pitch it like basically at the same people visually. The idea being, which we play with a lot, is that like brand and retail are such potent visual spaces, and we really collectively get it. Like, you fully do not need to have like done a degree in graphic design to walk past a shop and understand who it is for. Like, it's so built into our brain. So we're really interested in how you can kind of play with some of that. So how you could kind of bring people into a space that they think is a certain thing, play with some of those tropes. So we played with this kind of three simple steps idea, but it's actually like nine, and it's actually very complicated. Kind of playing with these ideas that we recognize, but we can kind of flip them or twist them to have a slightly different sort of conversation. And we had, when I was there, we had a guy who like rushed in, like, oh, can I just buy something for my mum for Mother's Day tomorrow? And it's like, oh, okay, this is going to be quite a big conversation. He was like, can I just buy one of those perfumes? And he was like, okay,
oh, wow.
Perfumes are all fictional. And like, they all have names that are all about like different types of societal pressures around reproduction. So
yeah,
A, they're not for sale. And B, like, let's talk about fertility and reproduction.
While you're here.
Well, yeah, I mean, while you're here. Mm-hmm. And then you can go down to Hotel Chocolat or whatever next. Yeah.
While you're here. That sounds really interesting. So on the kind of difficulties that surround designers, what's the hardest thing you've had to learn as a designer?
That's a great question. I think for me, a lot of this is maybe less with my liminal space hat on, because we have kind of amazing project managers, mm-hmm. and kind of a bigger organizational system in place. I think for me, maybe more as a freelancer, I think it's probably around boundaries and building boundaries around the work, working out kind of how to communicate with clients, like where is it appropriate and useful for me to push back?
Where actually,
kind of had to negotiate those spaces. So I guess that in a way, there's more kind of relationship-based pieces of puzzle. I love working with people and being involved in different sorts of projects with different sorts of organizations and individuals. Mm-hmm. I think that can be quite a lot to navigate. It's like, and that comes in a bit to pricing, but that's also about like, okay, if I make this small change now that like doesn't seem like a big deal at all, mm-hmm. that becomes this and then I've not been kind of clear about where the limits of this work are and kind of protecting my own time, I guess,
yeah.
The value of what I do. I think that's a journey for sure. I'm still trying to get better at that or work out kind of where my level is for that. And I think it can be quite hard to teach. I think a lot of that has to be done kind of through practice and be like, right, that was terrible, I will never be doing that again, or like, okay, that thing went really well, let's do more of that.
Okay, so as a freelancer, you probably have to learn to take extra care with time and kind of making sure those boundaries and parameters are set nicely.
Yeah, and finding a way that feels good for you to mm-hmm. do that. And I find that really helpful, kind of sharing with friends who also work in those spaces, be like, oh, I tried doing this and that was really good.
Yeah.
Or like, I know people who are like, yeah, I like made up man who like sends my invoices to people, because then it's like, it makes me look like I'm kind of bigger and that like it needs to be paid sooner because I've got like an accounts person. It's like, okay, these are nice little hacks when you're small. And I think, yeah, sharing that between you is like such valuable knowledge.
That's good. So let's say you have a project you really enjoyed. Once it's finished, is it hard to let go? Do you try to extend it at any time, or are you just almost grateful with the experience and happy to move on?
I'm always so happy to move on. And we're done. Okay, great, next. If I had that basically the same as when I was studying to I love this project. I love this project. Oh my God, I hate this project. I want it to be done. And if it's done, like, oh, that project. And then, but I quite regularly will come back to things a couple of months later and be like, I think that was quite good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I have a bit of a kind of...
Okay, it goes in like stages and waves.
On it. But I have quite a few people who I work with kind of on a repeat basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that has always felt really good to kind of learn from the project and iterate and build it up better for the next year and kind of to maintain those relationships so that hopefully when something else comes up, they'll get in touch. Mm-hmm. Liminal Space are incredibly good at that, kind of extending the reach of the work or kind of building in reviews with clients after the work has been done,
okay,
to reflect and debrief together, which mm-hmm. is really valuable process for everyone involved, but also a little bit of a like, oh, and it'd be really good if we could do this, or
mm-hmm.
oh, you spoke about that, is there any way that we could think together about extending that?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really good at kind of
building the
connections, working out together what could be done with it next, kind of while there's still momentum.
Yeah.
For me as a freelancer, I tend to be a bit more, a lot of the work I do is kind of people I've known for quite a long time, or it's quite mm-hmm. relationship based. So that's a bit more of a kind of slower boil, but a, a kind of the ability to go like, oh, I've got this thing, do you think you'd be interested? And like, yeah, that'd be great, let's have a call about it. So that's maybe a bit more of an informal way of kind of extending the work that you're not quite sure what it is yet, but if it comes up in future.
And as it pertains to the next stage, the next level for our graduates, what makes a designer stand out to you?
The Holy Grail. I guess it's a couple of different things. This is me with my, you know, this, when I'm looking for stuff around the liminal space in particular, because it is such a kind of socially driven organization, and so many of the works connect into kind of bigger ethical conversations. I guess I'm always interested in people who are excited about the content that they're working with, as well as the design that they've done that goes with it. So who are kind of passionate and engaged about the topics. I'm always looking for, and I'm excited by stuff that I can see people have initiated themselves. Not necessarily, you know, it doesn't need to be like massive and expensive by any means, but I guess some sense of, yeah, I wanted to see what would happen with this, so I tried, or I collaborated with a friend of mine who's doing this really exciting thing, and I made these posters for an event that they're working on, or we're writing a book together, or I've done this like experimental film work with this friend who makes music. Like, I think all of, for me, those things that kind of show that beyond purely the realm of like, here's my student projects, that you're also kind of excited and interesting about like what design could do, or how you could use it as a tool in your world. I find that really, really exciting, and I think it shows that someone's got kind of initiative and passion. And then I guess ditto when you talk to someone in person, that they're kind of curious and interested. I don't think that's the, I think those combination is not the case for every design job in the world. I guess I'm talking about my little bubble, where that sort of curiosity and like being interested in topics outside of design in the spaces that I work is really important. But for other people, that would be, you know, design plus something else, like other combinations of those things. But in my little world, that's what I'd always be on the lookout for.
Okay, that's good. And any advice for new graduates who are thinking to embrace freelancing?
I think starting small is fine. Okay. I think there's also, I'm a big fan of slightly reframing work that is not quite commercial as commercial. So I got my first job. I worked on two, when I was studying at Brighton in my third year, I worked on two catalogues for two other courses, one with architecture and one with textiles, because I had a friend who was doing both of them, basically. And I got my first job basically off the back of those, because within those there was like, oh yeah, I had worked with the printer, and yeah, I had managed a budget. And like, in reality, it's like, yeah, it was a mate. There wasn't, I didn't get paid. It was just for the degree show and the course next door. But I think it's about reframing that to be like, catalogue produced for BA architecture, you know, handled a budget, worked with a printer, can do a print spec. So I think it's fine when you're starting that those things might be small, they might be with people that you know, but that I think it's just about framing those to like slightly step out of yes, I'm a student, but also I'm a practitioner. And if I could just slightly reframe these to be like, oh, it's like just like a little student product. It's like, no, it's a valid body of work. And you can, I think that's a really helpful way to occupy a slightly in between space and like get your foot in a door. I would suggest that. And then other things around freelance work, I think is trying to build in some boundaries for yourself around kind of, these are the sorts of hours that I'm going to do. I think it can be really I'm trying to get better at this. It can be really like, oh, they sent all the stuff late, but I guess I'm going to have to stay up till 3 a.m. to finish it because that's what the deadline was. And it's like, no, they were late. So then it's finding smart ways to be like, you know, to articulate those deadlines as you go, And to be like, if I don't receive it by this time, not in a mean way, but like, if I don't receive it by this time, there'll be a knock-on effect for the timeline. Okay. I think it's just finding ways to, like, it's not your job to, like, hold all of the things that go wrong in the whole process.
Yeah.
So, but finding ways to articulate that. And then I think just, I would always suggest, yeah, finding other people who are in a similar position so you can kind of share knowledge and intelligence about, and like little sort of tips and tricks, and also that there'll be a great network for, you know, in a couple, yeah, there'll be points where it's like, oh, I don't have time to do this job. I do that quite a lot. I don't have time to do this job, but I'd love to recommend these three people.
Ooh.
And if you can be one of those three people for a couple of people, and you can
all
each other, then that kind of, the work begins to multiply quite quickly.
That's really nice, for a nice little network. And if you know you can't do it because you've set your time accordingly, then pass it on.
Totally. And it comes back. It always comes back somewhere else.
Oh, good. Okay. So we're about to enter our fire round.
Oh, my God.
Don't be scared. It's essentially just a series of questions. You don't have to think about it too much. You can kind of answer it within a quick kind of time scale, right? Ready?
Ready.
Okay. So, if you could work with anyone that are alive, who would it be?
Oh, my God. Okay, I want to work with Bell Hooks, who's a radical educator. I'm not sure I could bring anything to the table, but I would just like to be in her presence and maybe write down some of the things that she said and make, like, a book of them.
Okay, that's really cool. I swear, isn't that psychology?
She does, like, she straddles quite a lot of different fields. She straddles, like, gender studies, politics, education, all of it. I would use graphic design as a way to, like, be in her presence.
Fair enough. Okay, number two. Favorite recent designer you think people should know about?
I'm a big fan of... Oh, no, okay, I'm going to plug.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to plug
by the way,
Plan B Studio, who I worked with at the RCA two years ago, I think. And they run, they're a brilliant two-woman outfit graphic design studio, mm-hmm. but they also run a thing called Sold Out Publishing, which is about diversifying and decolonizing kind of graphic design references, bringing kind of, rather than looking for the books that were left out, they're publishing them themselves and they're making it happen. So I'm going to plug and hype Plan B Sold Up.
Nice. Okay. What are your thoughts for designing with the environment in mind? Are you currently there, or are you working towards it?
I guess we're thinking about sustainability in quite a broad sense of the word. So we're certainly thinking about it around use of material. We do a lot of stuff for sort of exhibition takeaways. And that can be a bit tricky because you're pumping out a lot of stuff. So I guess at the simplest level, we'd always use recyclable materials so that stuff can go in the bin or not, or in the recycling rather than in the bin. Mm-hmm. But we're also trying to think bigger about, we've got a lot of exhibition stuff that's in lockups, and we're trying to think bigger and better about, we'll keep calling it afterlife, like how we can extend the reach of projects. They're kind of at a bigger level beyond just use of material. It's like, rather than having something up for 3 weeks, can we have it up for 3 weeks? And then it travels, or it goes to this place, or it has another life. So we're looking in general, actually, a bit more about sort of pop-up mobile formats. We've got Horse Box at the moment that's in Leeds, that's traveling around the country. So things that kind of extend the reach of things rather than starting from new every time, which I think as a designer can be a bit tricky, because I just want... You know, I just want to make new things.
So that's
a really good rethinking, sort of systems level thinking about, like, maybe the idea of making anything that just is seen once is kind of, we need to work and revisit that generally as an idea.
Fair enough. Okay. Working with friends and family, yes or no?
Wedding invitations, no.
Oh.
Wedding invitations are, like, iconically the worst job in the world. Yes, absolutely yes. Well, it's tricky because I know, like, a lot of people that I know are sort of in a weird space between work and friend, or that we sort of work on projects together. I think where there's a shared mission and intention Absolutely, yes. When it's a collaboration, essentially.
Okay. Yes.
If it's a like, I actually have done exactly this, but if it's like just doing a leaflet for your auntie,
mm-hmm.
well, you probably owe your auntie one. So maybe it's fine if it's like in repayment, but as a like ongoing life thing,
Got you.
Set her up with a friend. That's the answer.
Network.
And then hopefully you get set up with someone else's auntie and everything's fine.
Yeah, that would work out nice. Circle of life. Working for free, yes or no?
Similar to previous question. So I work for free with migrants and culture and with political causes that I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have, because there's no money. But that's me. I feel, in my mind, I put that more in the space of what, like design volunteer,
mm-hmm.
Rather than working for free. Working for free on projects where there is some money somewhere and you're not getting it, no.
Yeah.
Working for free on projects where there is no money depends on the project.
Mm-hmm. I get you. So, advice on trends, stay away or embrace them?
I used to work, so my previous job was working in a organization that did some trend forecasting, mm-hmm. and I loved it and found it super interesting. So we were working on it more looking at kind of what is driving these aesthetics. So like mm-hmm. what are the social factors and underpinning contextual stuff that creates the conditions to create these aesthetics? And we'd look at that across sort of fashion, product, interior, graphics. That I found always super interesting. I think when it's purely visual, if it's just like purely visual graphic design trend, I feel like you do you. Like, I think it's important to know kind of what the vibe is in the world aesthetically. Mm-hmm. I think you can choose then to kind of do your own thing, or I find it sometimes to be quite helpful kind of stepping off points is to look at what's out there and get a vibe of, like, particularly because we work a lot with like, okay, we're trying to make it look and feel a bit like a beauty brand, then it's really important to understand what are the visual tropes of beauty brands in order to find just the right level. So that one is slightly different, but I feel like quite quickly as soon as you're in a freelance space or out in the world, particularly, you kind of get a vibe of like, what is the purpose of the project? What is my visual voice and aesthetic? Mm-hmm. And I think what can be, while you're studying, quite a kind of incubator of like, oh my God, four people's work look exactly the same. Oh my God, they're all using the same colors. This is just like the same thing. I think quite mm-hmm. quickly can become, I think everyone's aesthetics start to diverge a bit more because you're applying them into like completely different contexts, completely different ways of working, different goals, different aims. I've never been a like wholesale, I don't think I've ever been cool enough to go like full trend on anything, but I think mm-hmm. everyone's aesthetic changes over time in relation to what's out there in the world. Like, I really like a lot of bright colors, but the type, my color palette is changing over time connected to what's what else is out there. So I think you can never be on your own little island, but you probably don't want to be like slavishly, you know, doing something that doesn't feel honest to yourself.
Fair enough. I would probably say read the room.
Read the room. Work out, first of all, which room you want to walk into, and then read mm-hmm.
it. Exactly. Read it after that.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you say is your favorite part of the design process?
So particularly for liminal space stuff, I love getting my head into like new areas and topics and like just being dropped into these new spaces and being like, what is this? What is going on? Read the room. What is the vibe? Mm-hmm. What's most important here? I don't know much about this. You're an expert. What's the edit? What do people need to know? And I particularly enjoy doing that with like, and what is the right aesthetic for that?
Yeah.
That message. Okay. So we're trying to reach... We did a project recently that's in the Natural History Museum, but it's within one mm-hmm. of their exhibitions. So we're trying to reach a younger audience than we're trying to reach like a young adult, older teenager audience there, which is not people who are often in that space. What are the aesthetics that are appropriate for that group of people within the context of the Natural History Museum? So it doesn't jar, but mm-hmm. it feels different. I particularly enjoy that initial, like, what is it? How should it look? How does it feel? Who is it for? Kind of untangling that knot, or like building a picture in my mind of what that puzzle is. I really enjoy that. That bit for me is really, I think often the best bits of work are the bits where you feel like you're using all the parts of your brain mm-hmm. or like a combination of skills that maybe other people don't necessarily have. And for me, that is like, okay, here's this subject topic area that I'm going to try and understand with my aesthetic understanding. Here's what I think that feels like. And I can start to create some analogies between sort of the content and the visual devices that we're using. That's my, like, my happiest place.
Okay, so I'm thinking maybe research, initial ideas.
Yeah, initial concept development. Yeah, I mean, that's why I call myself a research lead designer, because that is my very happy
place. Your happy place.
Yeah, like, I enjoy implementing that and producing that. Mm-hmm. But that bit for me feels like the magic bit.
Yeah, I think there's something really nice about continuously learning, and how even though you're creating, it still gives you the chance to do that with so many other topics.
I guess it's that. Yeah, you're right. It feels sort of new or different or generative each time.
Yeah. Okay. So because of our theme that we have on our social media currently, if you've checked it out, we are going to ask, what was your favorite video game growing up?
Oh my God, I barely played. Sims. I just played Sims. Does that even count as a video?
Yes, it does.
Okay, yeah, that was my life, basically. That was my passion. Building little Sims houses, like designing them really carefully, taking absolutely ages, mm-hmm. and being really mad when my brother would come in and just like put a load of fireworks in each room and burn the whole thing down.
Did you get back into it over the pandemic?
I did not. I've got into textiles. That's been my lockdown. I thought about it. Sims did cross my mind, and I was like,
"Yeah."
Then to make trousers, so I did that instead. But it could have happened. It could have happened.
It could have, because it blew up. There were so many videos about people playing. I think I even downloaded it again. It's too much.
I used to be. I would like live for that. Be like getting a new Sims expansion pack was like the best day of my life.
Yeah, they've really upgraded since.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I bet it looks different than it did in 2004. But
okay. So, also, last question. So, if you've checked out our Instagram, is there any work that is currently standing out to you at the moment?
Oh my God, no, I'm totally not playing that game. Is that I was super, when we came in to do the Going Solo project, the project that we ran around loneliness and youth loneliness.
Yeah.
Super, super, super impressed by the work, but also like the way that people spoke about the work. I was so impressed by how how clear and compelling and how like well constructed all of the narratives were around that work, and that the ability to present and to construct a clear story through. And like, and often I think that can be, obviously we live in a very visual world, obviously we're designers, so of course that the visuals around the Instagram are super, super, super important. But there was something in that narrative and that communication that I just thought was so incredibly impressive when we came in to work with you guys.
That's good.
So I think, the visuals are super important, but there is also, there's a bigger story there, I think, always around that kind of storytelling and that connection. And those are also such valuable professional skills. That's my like total duck out of that question.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Nicely done. Nicely done.
Thank you so much.
Final question. Three things to keep in mind when designing.
I think there's always, for me, when I think something is good, I've realized is increasing like when I feel excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think using that and your own kind of gut and inner gut feeling, whatever, of like, I think this is done when I am excited by it.
Okay.
Looking for that feeling. I think it's about, for me, it's, I can sometimes be like, oh, but I don't feel like this individual project has broken new ground, or it's not as cool as I wanted it to be. I think I'm trying to, like, this is it's a journey. It's not one project. We're going to be, working for like we're going to be working for a really, really long time.
Yes, you are.
It's like, it's a journey. If you don't feel like you've nailed it in this one project, it's okay. There's going to be more projects. I feel like I'm not giving you three things to keep in mind. I feel like I'm giving you three like reassuring inner life mantras.
That's okay.
Okay, great.
That's okay.
and one is a friend said to me, which is like, you are more than your work.
Ooh.
As a human being, I think. I think it's building in some modes of separation there about, I love this work and I'm excited about this work. Hopefully I can make a living doing this work.
But
I'm also more than the work that I make. I do not derive all of my value as a human from this work.
I love that. I love that. It's
very reassuring on my friend.
Yeah,
of course.
I do love that. Especially for going into the industry now where it's like you will be measured essentially by your work.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah. We're all full people and that part is for myself and for lots of people is a big part of it, but it's not all of you.
All right, well, that wraps up this session. Thank you, Laura, for joining us. It's been a delight talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. What a nice way to spend this morning.
That's good. Okay. Thank you for stopping by today.
Yeah, take care, and I will speak to you soon, and good luck with everything over the coming weeks.